It's official.
Please raise your right hand. Do you, Laura Kelly?
Democrat Laura Kelly has moved out of her old state Senate office in the State House and into the second floor suite reserved for Kansas's governor. I'm Jim McLean, and this is State House Blend, Kansas.
So help you God. Thank you. Congratulations, Governor.
Well, week one of the 2019 session was a coming out party for the new governor. On Inauguration Day, Kelly urged lawmakers to work with her to repair the damage she says remains from years of lean budgets.
And let the insults and finger pointing give way to compromise and a handshake.
A few days later, in her State of the State speech, Kelly talked about her top priorities: ending the long litigation over school finance, expanding Medicaid, and addressing what she calls the life and death problems in the foster care system.
This is an emergency. These are our children in our communities facing abuse, neglect, and worse.
Kelly delivered a spending blueprint at the end of the week. Budget Director Larry Campbell says it's aimed at addressing the state's most urgent needs while not breaking the bank.
I will address each of the agenda items further in the presentation, but in brief, the governor's budget restores financial integrity and promotes sound budgeting stability and sustainability.
Well, that isn't how Republicans see it. Senate Majority Leader Jim Denning, for one, he says it spends too much and sabotages efforts to shore up the state employee pension fund.
So this whole budget is built on a house of cards.
The governor's proposed budget depends on the legislature essentially ordering the board that oversees CAPERS to reamortize its debt, to extend the schedule for paying it off. It would free up about $150 million a year for other priorities, but add billions in interest over the next 30 years. The vice president of the Senate, Jeff Longbine, a third-generation owner of the Chevy Buick dealership in Emporia, agrees that part of Kelly's budget will be a tough sell.
To give people a perspective, it's like having a 30-year mortgage on your house and you're in year 22 and all of a sudden you decide that you want to refinance it for another 30 years. Is that prudent? I don't know. I think today it would be a very tough sell. But as we work through the process and we start looking at priorities and how we pay for those priorities, then everything's in play.
If you don't do this, you don't really have enough money to do much of anything. That is, that frees up money that allows you maybe to attack the problems at the Department for Children and Families, the foster care problems, fund Medicaid expansion, do a couple of other things. So that really is the question, isn't it? Priorities versus the potential inflation of the cost of it down the road?
It is. It's, are the needs so great and so immediate that it's worth kicking the can down the road? Or do we live in the situation we're in now and try to get by until we get on firmer footing? We have worked extremely hard over the last 2 years to get us back into good financial shape. And we need to work equally as hard to make sure we stay there.
One of the things it seems that Republicans and Democrats agree on is the urgency about fixing the problems at the Department of Children and Families, problems that cause the agency to lose track of some children and fail to protect others in abusive homes. Do you also view that as an urgent problem?
Absolutely. It may be our number one priority. I would certainly put the foster care system above Medicaid expansion, although Medicaid expansion is extremely important to our rural hospitals. But we have a crisis at DCF, and we need to fix it.
I would assume then you support the governor's plan to spend about $15, $16 million to hire more social workers, strengthen programs that are aimed at preventing abuse and keeping families together.
I really haven't had the opportunity yet to look specifically at our program. All I know is we have an extreme problem over there, and we need to divert whatever resources are necessary to fix the problem.
And finally, let's get to highways. The governor is proposing to slow but not stop the transfer of money out of KDOT, otherwise known as the Bank of KDOT, Kansas Department of Transportation. But she's not talking about restarting the highway building projects that were shelved during the Brownback administration, nor is she talking about a new multi-year transportation plan at this point. So are those things that are still just financially out of reach for the state?
I quite frankly was disappointed in her State of the State speech in that transportation and higher ed seemed to be afterthoughts. No details, no support, no requests for the legislature to work on it. Transportation to me is extremely important. Her budget would move about another $25 million from the general fund back to transportation. That's not enough. I mean, that's $100 million. And our estimated cost right now just for preservation and maintenance is around $400.
big picture question, which is, I don't know how many times she referenced it in her State of the State speech, but she made numerous calls for bipartisanship and reminded you that she was once one of you, a member of the Kansas Senate. So what is the thought process in terms of the Republican leadership in terms of taking her up on that call for bipartisanship?
Well, from the governor's perspective, I would have done the exact same thing. I mean, she is a Democrat governor who is working with a Republican-controlled legislature. And so she has to have bipartisan support to get any of her agenda passed. You know, I think from the public standpoint, we are very partisan and we have these battles each day. But in reality, probably 85% of the bills that go across our floor are unanimous votes. It's those areas where we don't agree that we have to work together, figure out a solution, compromise, and I hope we can approach the session that way.
Senate Vice President Jeff Longbong, thanks a lot for your time. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate the opportunity to visit with your listeners.
This will be a short week for lawmakers because of the Martin Luther King holiday. But there will still be plenty of briefings designed to bring first-termers and veterans alike up to speed on critical issues like electric rates and the health of the state employee pension plan. Governor Kelly will also take the first step toward fulfilling her promise to expand Medicaid by appointing a bipartisan working group to help finalize her plan. The governor says she wants to have that plan in hand by the end of the month. Representative Susan Concannon says having the governor's full backing improves the chances of getting an expansion bill through the legislature. But with Republican leaders threatening to prevent a vote on it, it's far from a sure thing.
We can get it on the House floor. We can amend something. You know, that's not impossible, but the Senate's a tough road. So
lawmakers passed a Medicaid expansion bill 2 years ago, but then Republican Governor Sam Brownback vetoed it. There's no chance of a veto this time around, but with changes in the makeup of the legislature, there may be fewer votes for expansion, particularly, says Senator John Scoobel, in the Senate.
I'd like to see a hard vote just as quick as we can so we know what the lay of the land is going to be.
Expansion advocates will need votes from 21 of 40 senators and 63 of the 125 members of the House. This is Statehouse Blend Kansas in Topeka. I'm Jim McLean.
Statehouse Blend Kansas is a production of the Kansas News Service, a collaboration of public radio stations all across the state. Nameless Dancers made the funky music we use for our theme, which we found in Free Music Archive. I'm Amy Jeffries, editor of the Kansas News Service and this podcast. Follow the Kansas News Service for news throughout the week and subscribe to Statehouse Blend in your podcast app or wherever you listen.